The Privilege is a Rank by Chai Chak, read by CookieMom6067. Stardate 2394.9, 1048. Morning on the bridge is usually full of good-natured conversation, but this morning the place is deathly silent, the Lieutenant Corps staring at their consoles with uncharacteristic focus. La'an is pleased. The phaser banks needed recalibrating anyway, and the math has always been a pleasant challenge that nevertheless requires her full concentration. She's almost done when her workstation's focus is grabbed away by a group chat. Erica Ortegas has invited you to the pad chat, Spockuation. Lieutenant Ortegas, someone has to tell him. Lieutenant Mitchell, not it. Ensign Uhura, not it. Lieutenant Carey, not it. Lieutenant Noonien Singh, tell him what? Lieutenant Carey, hang on. Over on the engineering console, Lieutenant Carey raises her head. La'an, could you give me a hand with something? La'an dutifully gets up and walks over, bending down so that Carey can whisper to her, look behind you. Spock's neck. The captain is on his rounds with Una. Therefore, Spock is sitting in the chair. His posture is perfect as usual, something La'an has always admired and slightly fancied him for. He looks his normal self, apart from, no, I can't, La'an hisses. You can't make me. Carey just shrugs. First rule of the military, never volunteer. La'an sighs. Is the captain in the ready room? She whispers. Carey shakes her head. Good luck. There's an emergency kit in the third drawer down. Lieutenant Spock, La'an says in her best head of security voice, can I speak to you in the captain's ready room, please? Stardate 2395.2, 1943. It takes 3 days of stolen moments and irritating pad chess notification tones for Spock to accept that Jim might be better than him at chess. Spock looks at his statistics, at this wholly unfamiliar losing streak, and immediately starts a new game. Stardate 2394.9-0642. In hindsight, Christine knew she was never going to be able to keep Spock long-term, even before that strange ensign confirmed it. Still, she thought she'd keep him a bit longer than a day. She catches Spock sneaking back into his quarters, trying to pretend he had awoken early. But Christine has always been a sentimental sleeper. She likes feeling his heat, likes waking up and touching his skin in between REM cycles. It had been a disappointing night. It is a horrible thing to wake up at 3 a.m. and hope against hope that some horrible space disaster was what was keeping your lover from you. Spock looks guilty when she sits up. His uniform looks creased, like it has been lying on someone's floor all night. Take off your top, she whispers. And true to his nature, he skims off his crumpled jersey, exposing his handsome sculpted chest for her inspection. She can see from across the room that his skin is flushed, and there are broken capillaries everywhere, lascivious round welts of passion, with teeth imprints so vivid she's fairly sure she could run them through the computer and get a match. Who is she? Christine says quietly. Spock just looks at her as if digesting something complicated. Tell me, she shouts, fury bubbling up inside her. I am trying to determine the best way to correct your choice of pronoun, Spock says simply. Humiliation rips through her. I don't care about man or woman. Who is he? James Kirk of the Farragut, Spock replies. Christine wants to scream. Sam's brother? When did you even meet him? Ensign Uhura introduced us. When? She wants to be sick. After you went to bed. Christine throws herself out of bed, gathering her uniform from where she had neatly, oh so neatly, folded it on the chair. I'm going. Consider this over, she spits, struggling into her jumpsuit as fast as she can, and then running out of the room so fast the door can barely open in time. He doesn't chase after her. she doesn't want him to, but it is still galling that he doesn't. When she gets back to her quarters, they're cold. She hasn't been there in days, and the ship has sensed this and powered down her preferences. She calms Joseph and tells him she's taking a personal day, and he promises to come by after the shift and check on her. Scrabbling through her bathroom, she finds an emergency sleep hypo in her old wash bag left over from the war and jams it into her throat without remorse or even checking the expiry. The compound is one of Joseph's good ones, but she forgot how quickly they kick in. She staggers over to her bed just as the wave of emotion and humiliation swamps her, but she is trapped in its tow for barely a minute before sleep takes her. Stardate 2394.9-1312. The rumor mill on the Enterprise is extremely efficient. But while there are scandals at every level, knowledge of them tends to be contained not by department but by rank. This is by design. Lower ranks have a lot of drama among themselves, which may be short-term entertaining but ultimately a distraction. It is unofficial Starfleet policy that the upper and lower ranks are kept socially separate, especially on a ship like the Enterprise, for the sake of morale, cohesion, and everyone being able to look each other in the eye. If some new XO were to ask Una for advice on effective first officering, she'd have told him to never forget that senior staff have the capacity to be just as messy and difficult as their lower deck compatriots. Too gossipy a ship is contrary to military standards, and the XO should enforce this with the full gamut of their soft skills. Fraternization between the worlds should be clamped down on hard. That said, it is very important, as XO, to know where the holes in the fence are, so to speak, and to identify them as quickly as possible so they can be exploited in an emergency. Best to seem omniscient than ignorant. Una has a standing biweekly mid-morning coffee with Lieutenant Commander Dolores Conan, senior shift lead in the Gravitational Research Laboratory. Officially, she's positioned under both Spock in Sciences and Pelia in Engineering, but these small, nerdy departments mostly run themselves as benevolent fiefdoms. Conan is responsible for a team of 20 who manage artificial gravity development, second-line maintenance, upgrades, and research, and at last count, she has served on 12 ships, putting herself up for reassignment to a new ship every 2 years like clockwork. Una snapped her up when she saw that Conan had put herself up from the Yamagata against some pretty stiff competition, as it is well known that Conan is the greatest gossip monger the fleet has ever seen. Pike is terrified of her. He had been XO for long enough to spot departmental heads like that, and wisely these days keeps his distance. Across the mess, Una watches a confab of her senior staff talking low together on their lunch break. She notes a notable missing member from the group, and so Una decides to hazard a guess at what everyone is talking about. "So what's going on with Spock?" Una asks Conan, who had, up until now, been giving an update on the love lives and plot twists from the latest episodes of The Ensigns of Deck 12, the actual soap opera everyone in the fleet claims to not watch. "Well, depends on who you ask," Conan says, stirring her coffee, not batting an eyelash at the change of subject. "Some say he's loved up with Nurse Chapel after the breakup with his fiancée. I heard from Barbara, my second, that she heard Kyle complaining that Spock beamed over from the Farragut about half an hour before his shift started this morning. And then someone said that she swore that he was not only wearing yesterday's uniform, but that he had signs of recently used a dermal on himself and had missed a spot." "Missed what?" Una asks. "Love bites," Conan says. "Absolutely riddled with them, I heard, but can't confirm myself. I can confirm that Christine isn't on duty today. I was in sick bay for my shoulder. You know how it's been plaguing me. And she's normally there on Tuesdays. I hope she's okay. So it could be a sex game, or he could have cheated on her, but..." Conan taps her spoon on her cup pensively. "I mean, Spock was here all yesterday, right? I had two meetings with him as part of departmental stuff. My team didn't say he was on the station, and no Enterprise crew were on the Farragut, so it must be someone from the ship. But you know gossip like that wouldn't have stayed a secret. Actually, no, that's not true, is it? She snaps her fingers. The Farragut's phaser guy, Kirk. He came over to see his brother. He's been promoted to XO, Una shares, because it's important to pay back in kind. Oh, bit young for it, isn't he? Conan muses. I suppose he's more like his dad. Sam definitely favors Winona. We were at the academy together, you know, lovely girl. Great with her hands, a natural engineer. He gets his mustache from her, too, she says impishly. Oh, I need to call her. Let her know how her boys are doing. Anyway, my son's on Starbase 12, and he says Jim Kirk's a dark horse. Very much a lock up your women and hide the fried chicken type, if you get my drift. Una didn't. But she's always been rubbish at keeping up with whatever media the fleet is obsessed with, and it didn't matter, because Conan was still processing out loud, leaning forward on her elbows, hands framing her mouth to protect from lip readers. So do you think young Spock slept with Kirk's brother? She whispers, shaking her head. To think I was talking to his mother just a couple of weeks ago about the engagement dinner while she was here. Saw her in the head on deck 8, and it had been ages since I chatted with her. Her husband tried to place that foster daughter of his with me way back when she was transferring from the VSA, but she wanted something more social sciences. Ended up on the Shenzo, of course, and we all know how that ended up going. Before Conan could think too hard about Burnham, the Discovery, and somehow accidentally deduce the whole conspiracy from one of Una's mistimed eyebrow twitches, Una thanks her and changes the subject to the hybrid flooring trial, currently being held in Corridor X-9. Lolly, why didn't you go into espionage? Una asks as they leave. Conan laughs. Oh, you know me, Una. Can't keep my mouth shut for love or money. Plus, she leans in close and stage whispers, I just bloody love baffle plates. That's why the captain keeps me around, I think. Stardate 2394.9-1504. Spock finishes his duty with a new record of 3 crying lieutenants to deal with in a single shift. He's only responsible for 2 of them, but the number still eats at him. Today has not been a good one, especially once he had been told that he'd been walking around the ship broadcasting his infidelity on all frequencies. He sits down with a glass of water and reviews his personal messages. None from Christine, but he isn't surprised. In fact, there is just one new message from a Lieutenant Kirk. It is a flaw in the pad chat service that it is impossible to tell from the preview which Kirk. You have my undershirt, Jim had written. Spock absently tugs at his sleeve in relief. It's true, now he thinks about it, the jersey isn't feeling right with its counterpart. That must be why he feels so out of sorts. They're replicated together for a smooth fit. Then underneath, Jim has sent him an invitation to play pad chess. Spock accepts. He settles down and waits for Jim to make his first play before getting up and finally changing out of his uniform. He does not recycle the undershirt. Maybe he'll give it back one day. A ding sounds. Jim has chosen white and made his first move. Spock raises an eyebrow. Intriguing. Stardate 2394.9-2254. Sam is in the mess when he finally hears the rumors. In the corner, Christine is surrounded by a gaggle of women, not her usual gang of friends, but something closer to a protective wall. None of the women around her are talking, just there. She's drinking, as if alone. Erica has a hand on her shoulder, but it mostly seems to be there to keep her stuck to the floor. He thinks about the Kinsey people of Galden 9, and his stomach sinks. Why is Christine upset? He asks the nearest ensign. He doesn't recognize her by name, but she's in Nurses White's. Spock cheated on her, the ensign says simply, and her friend elbows her. What? It's broken containment. It's all anyone can talk about. Did he go back to his fiancée? The engineering lieutenant to his right asks, leaning half across the bar to join the conversation. No, actually, the nurse says. You'd think that would be it, but no. He apparently hooked up with some tactical guy from the Farragut. Sam's brain slams to a halt. No way, the man to his left says. Damn, I never would have pegged Spock as the type. The nurse leans in. So what I heard was that they left together around midnight, and then Spock came back right before his shift, looking like he'd been ridden hard and put away wet, like hickeys all up his neck. He tried to dermal them, but missed a spot and spent the whole day just walking around with this guy's teeth marks on the nape of his neck like a brand. So, do we know this mystery guy's name? Damn, I left my pad in my quarters, the engineer says. On autopilot, Sam pulls out his pad, and after a few aborted flicks to open the messenger, starts typing furiously. Man, calm down, the nurse says. You're going to break a finger stabbing at it like that. Sam puts it down. The Farragut's tactical officer is Jim Kirk, he says furiously. My little brother. My little brother, who apparently now fucked my boss. Shit, man. What are you going to do? The lieutenant says, gesturing to the bartender for Sam to get a top up. Sam looks dramatically out of the starboard window, filial betrayal running like fire through his veins. I'm going to tell Dad. Stardate 2394.9, 1052. La'an walks into the ready room with purposeful haste, not letting Spock have the opportunity to argue or inquire why, and goes straight to the drawer Carrie indicated and removes the dermal regenerator, standing to attention with it hidden behind her back by the time he enters. What is it? Spock asks. Up close. He looks exhausted. You have a mark on the back of your neck. It's causing the crew to gossip. She brings her arms forward and holds up the dermal regenerator for his inspection. Spock pales, but just nods and takes a seat, bending his head forward. La'an carefully runs the dermal over the bruise. It is almost beautiful in the range of colors that whoever had done it had managed to raise on him, a nebula-like spectrum of blues, greens, and purples. She tidies up the edges of what were likely other bruises that he had been able to reach. All done, she says, turning off the device and stepping back. Spock stands awkwardly, and maybe it's her imagination, but he's moving a bit more stiffly than usual. He nods to her and then leaves to go back on duty. La'an puts away the regenerator and then goes back to her seat. Pad chat, Spockuation. 20-plus unread messages. Lieutenant Ortegas, it's a Spock situation. I would have named it Spocktastrophe, but apparently we already used that one. Lieutenant Mitchell, is anyone else thinking what I'm thinking? Lieutenant Carey, Christine wouldn't let him walk around like that? Lieutenant Noonien Singh, it's done. Lieutenant Ortegas, we owe you, La'an, less than 3. Ensign Uhura, oh no. Lieutenant Mitchell, what? Ensign Uhura, look at the transporter logs from last night. 2394.9.0020. Successful transport cycle complete. USS Enterprise to USS Farragut. Lieutenant J.T. Kirk. Lieutenant S.T. Spock. 2394.9.0638. Successful transport cycle complete. USS Farragut to USS Enterprise. Lieutenant S.T. Spock. Lieutenant Ortegas. Shit. I gotta go see Christine. Can someone cover me for an hour? Lieutenant Noonien Singh. I can. Lieutenant Carey. Hang on. Since when does Spock have a first name? Spock just nods when Erica excuses herself and La'an takes her seat at the helm. There isn't much to do. The ship is flying itself, cruising along at warp 2 back to the heart of Federation space. In all honesty, she's just glad to have something to look at. Her thoughts whirl as she aggressively pushes down the horrible bubbling brook of jealousy that is threatening to spill over. Stardate 2395.00200. Jim is on Gamma shift for the Farragut's flight back. His privilege for taking over as XO is that he gets the worst shift patterns and a hell of a lot of overnights, and so wakes up 8 hours after an extremely pleasant and exhausting night, railing a handsome man into another plane of existence, to a pad full of furious messages from his brother that he deletes without reading. There's a message from Uhura, and when he opens it, it's a blurry picture of Spock, looking stoic and professional in the captain's chair. "Is this your doing?" the message says. He leaves her on read, which is honestly more than she deserves. Stretching out, he considers going for a run before his shift starts, but despite a good 8 hours, he is still physically exhausted, every muscle still singing from a good workout. Talk about resistance training. Vulcans are dense, packed muscle and heavy bones. Spock must be over 100 kilograms, even if he doesn't look it. He idly opens pad chess and makes a few plays against an anonymous opponent, before having a wicked idea. He finds Spock's contact in the Enterprise pad list and sends him an invitation to play. The Farragut and Enterprise work together often enough he needs to keep that door open. Plus, his social life is about to shrink dramatically, another privilege of rank. By the time he gets out of the shower, his shampoo had been squared away, so Spock had cleaned up in here before leaving, which for some reason is a mental image so hot, Jim has to rub one out then and there, imagining Spock covered in Jim's spunk, exploring his newly fucked body. When he gets back, Spock has accepted his invitation, and Jim makes his first play as he walks down to the mess to begin his day. Stardate 2394.9-0650. He can't go to sickbay. Even with the legally mandated medical discretion, they're all Christine's friends and colleagues. And even if they never discuss it, they'll all know. They would never assume he'd have cheated on her so easily, even though the evidence seems to suggest otherwise. He is, of course, cheating on T'Pring with Christine, in the fullness of Vulcan law. But violation of foreign law is far more forgivable than a breach of comradeship. In the bright light of the bathroom mirror, he looks like he's been ravaged, broken blood vessels under his skin blooming green all down his neck. The tips of his ears look especially bad. He traces them with the finger and documents the bursts of sensation. There's fingertip bruises under his clothes he can feel when he leans against the vanity to look closer, and he feels like he was branded everywhere Jim touched him. Even though he used Jim's sonic shower on the highest setting, he still feels slick and relaxed, like the string holding him together has slackened somewhat, and he is unsure how to pull himself back to normal. His away mission emergency kit has a dermal regenerator, he suddenly remembers. In his bathroom, he carefully undoes the immediate physical evidence of Jim's body on his, inside his, wiping away the marks he left on his skin. But despite this, despite looking like his usual self, he feels different. He feels a loushness under his skin. His strides are longer. He has to bite the inside of his cheek to not smile at the memory. He takes a moment to meditate, to pull the blanket of Serac's teachings around himself as cooling comfort. He pushes his emotional self down, puts him to bed, and lets him sleep. And checking the time, realizes he needed to be on the bridge 2 minutes ago. Stardate 2394.9-2034. Senior staff dinner is sacrosanct, and Chris has been having intrusive dreams all week of the sauce splitting and letting everyone down. His therapist doesn't believe that it is actually just about culinary anxiety and always tries to read more into it. Chris doesn't think it's that deep. Handmade pasta is a challenge, but one should rise to challenges, not shy away from them. He has been locked in his quarters all afternoon preparing, and when he serves the meal to his hungry crew, he sits back with a sigh of satisfaction. The flavors burst on his tongue, and he takes a moment to really enjoy the fruits of his labors. Normally, his crew is appreciative. But tonight there is no chatter or praise, just the quiet sounds of chewing and the clinking of cutlery. Chris puts down his fork. "All right, something's up. What are you not telling me?" "It's gossip, sir," La'an says reprovingly, glaring at Erica and Nyota. Chris looks around at the gaps in his seating arrangement and raises an eyebrow. I can probably deduce the main players. And let's just leave it at that, Una says sharply. The captain has the privilege of rank, to not have to deal with petty squabbles among the crew, something we should all aspire to attain. Let's keep our messiness squared away. Chris looks at the weakest gossip link of his senior staff, but Erica won't meet his eyes, enraptured instead in her ravioli. Una forces the change of subject and things get back to normal for the rest of the evening. He serves flan for dessert, and the group lingers for the appropriate amount of time before he lets them go, full and satisfied. Chris starts tidying up before bed, but stops when he finds a spare pad left on the counter. A scan of the lock screen reveals its owner. Chris rolls his eyes and asks the computer to page Lieutenant Ortegas to his quarters. Erica is there in moments, like she had been hanging around nearby. Sir, how negligent of me to have left my pad here, she says, grinning. Just tell me, I want to go to bed, Chris says. Spock and Chapel broke up, sir. Erica says. I had no idea they were seeing each other, Chris says, sitting down on a bar stool. But these things happen. We're professionals. If no one in the fleet ever served with someone they dated, we basically have no way of functioning. I don't get why this isn't something that we can't all be professional about. The uniform code. It's more what caused it that is the problem, Erica says. Jim Kirk, Sam's brother, the new XO of the Farragut. Chris whistles through his teeth. That man has charm, I won't deny it. Christine. It wasn't Christine, Erica interrupts. It was Spock. Chris just stares. Spock? Our Spock? Spock slept with Sam's brother? Erica nods, clutching her pad to her chest. Permission to speak crudely, sir. Chris rubs his eyes. Permission reluctantly granted. Spock came back from the Farragut about half an hour before Alpha, looking like someone had rode it till the wheels came off, and spent most of the morning with an enormous bite mark on the back of his neck until someone told him about it and attacked him with the dermal. He made three department heads cry, and everyone in the med bay is out for blood. Green blood, she says pointedly. Chris just looks appalled. I don't know what I am supposed to do with this information, Erica. Erica just shrugs. What the rest of us are doing with it, sir. Readjusting our internal paradigm, drinking through it, picking sides. Chris sighs and rubs his face with his hand while he thinks. Kirk's due to come and shadow Una for a whole week next month as part of his XO prep. I'm wondering now if I should find alternative arrangements. Erica looks stricken. Sir, you said the uniform code. Chris waves her away. I know. It's a learning experience, and Kirk is here to learn. He shakes his head, as if dismissing an intrusive thought. Thank you, Erica, though remind me in the future that Una is right, okay? I'm better off not knowing. I should be grateful my gossiping days are behind me. Aye, aye, sir, Erica grins, and lets herself out. 3 days later, 0437. Lieutenant Kirk. Just had it confirmed that I'll be back on the Enterprise next month for a week shadowing your XO. Lieutenant Spock. Understood. It will be a pleasure to see you again. Lieutenant Kirk. The pleasure is all mine, Mr. Spock. Lieutenant Spock. I must disagree. I believe the pleasure was mutual. Lieutenant Kirk began a new game of pad chess. Start. Forfeit. Start. The end.